You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Here we are.
We are here.
Black Heritage Month.
Come on. We did see that, though. And the thing was, I noticed it was different, but I didn't say anything.
Yeah. Like, what is Black Heritage Month?
Listen.
I guess they're just renaming all of our stuff. I feel like we're in this moment in time where we went from microaggressions to macroaggressions.
Bold.
Like, from 0 to 100 real quick.
Real quick. Like in my mind, it's, we're okay with you celebrating your heritage.
Yeah.
But all this history stuff, we're not trying to deal with that.
Yeah, like, what is, I'm just trying to figure out what is,
it's intimidating.
Like, how is it that
it makes you face your,
yeah,
ish.
But how is it that heritage is cool but history is not? So I guess that it's the fact that history includes facts. Heritage is just a feeling. It's just,
there you go.
Cultural.
Yeah.
Okay.
History is too woke.
Yeah. Can't talk about history.
Cannot talk about history.
Heritage. Yeah, history is where we draw the line. But heritage, that's cool. So either way, happy Black History Month for those who still celebrate the official thing. I guess we are technically at the tail end. We've been blackety black this month, I will say. We've been
definitely
active. We've had our fists up. We've had our fros picked out.
I'm rocking the curly natural today.
I am proud to say every single day this month, I have spent money with a Black-owned business. I feel really, really good about that.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
I'm on the other side. I'm trying to have some days where I don't spend any money
all,
but.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, that is the day coming up. Feb 28 is the day when folks are really supposed to take a fast from spending, period.
Mm.
That's what was called for by Al Sharpton and the National Action Network. By the time this episode comes out, the 28th will have passed.
Right.
But that's Friday.
Mm.
This week.
Okay.
No spending. Especially
so
not spending.
So does it have the same impact if you spend a lot on Thursday and then a lot on Saturday?
Like, see, do you remember what we said about
I'm not looking for a loophole.
Listen,
I'm just saying, like, is the impact the same?
We're not even trying to figure that out.
We're just going to go
announcing
along.
It.
Okay.
Okay. There are other folks saying, in addition to that, let's also
travel on Friday.
Yeah. Well, you might have to be like in the Green Book days and have some, fried chicken in a shoebox.
That's fine. It's the purchase of gas.
Yeah.
I don't think I can get around that. It's a road trip.
Oh, road trip. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right, we'll figure it out.
You'll figure it out. Gas can? Well, that's going to be smelly.
I think that's illegal.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So some ideas in addition. Change your spending all year. Don't just do it for one day or one month. I know there's also this fast of Target in March. Why not fast the rest of the year if it's like that? Another really good suggestion that I liked. Someone said, in addition to changing your spending, you also have to speak out about why you're changing your spending.
Hmm.
Not just on social media, but also in the comments on retail pages, like when they're asking for feedback, what do you think of this product or platform? Mm. Like, we need to say, look, I am no longer using this platform because of X, Y, and Z. I'm not shopping here anymore because of X, Y, and Z. I'm no longer willing or comfortable referring this business to other people because of X, Y, and Z. Like, these are things, like, businesses really look at their net promoter score. And when that starts to change, plus their sales starts to change, plus comments starts to get negative, like, now you're getting somebody's attention in addition to taking the day of not spending there.
Now that's really having impact. Yeah. I like that.
All the things.
We don't have to pick.
I mean, look, it's a menu of things you can do, but it's personal. Just like we've said in the past, if it moves your heart to spend money a certain way or not spend money a certain way, God bless you. More power to you. That's it.
Yeah.
But happy Black History Month. We've highlighted a couple of pioneers and Black history figures that maybe you haven't heard of this month. We'll keep that going. You know, we'll keep that going by the end of this show. We got a good one for today.
Yep.
But today, we're talking about Black financial advisors.
All 3% of us.
Yeah. There aren't enough of us. And it's an important job. So we'll talk about it from two perspectives. One, why you should consider a Black financial advisor if you don't have one already. And then secondly, why you should consider either getting into this field yourself, or maybe if you have young people in your life looking for careers, that maybe this should be on the list of consideration as well. Because financial advising really is a great career, despite the fact that not a lot of us, meaning Black folks, have migrated into this space.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenging field to be in. Not everybody is successful at it, but and we know there's been some barriers that have been put in our way over time, but it is a very fulfilling and rewarding career.
Challenging, fulfilling.
Yep.
Which one is it more of? If you had to do ratios.
Depends on what stage you're in. Those early days.
Yeah, challenging.
It's way more challenging than fulfilling. And it depends on where you are and how you're building it.
And the field is evolving, I will say this. Like, years ago, financial advising was a commission-based business that
was about
selling stuff nonstop and getting a commission that day for getting someone to buy shares in a particular company.
Yep.
It then evolved to mutual funds with commissions to where it is today, which is more around managed money. It's, you know, people pay a fee for advice and there's fiduciaries. And I think people are having the conversation of who's a fiduciary, but also like the ways that folks get paid is different. Like, there are folks who are salary and bonus in this field today when years ago there was only one way to pay people.
Absolutely. I love that there are options.
Yeah.
Variety. Diversity.
So we always start with data, and you gave one of the numbers that only 3% of financial advisors in this country are Black, but it's a great industry. It's a growing profession in our industry. So I'll first highlight the RIA firm. Momentum Advisors is an RIA firm. This is a firm that is registered with the SEC specifically as a fiduciary firm. So that word RIA stands for Registered Investment Advisor. And the number of firms, I won't say like Momentum, but the number of firms registered like Momentum, because we're one of a kind. There aren't too many firms like us. But the number of SEC Registered Investment Advisory firms has increased by about 14% since 2019. And today there's over 15,000 firms that are registered with the SEC as fiduciaries. And that's an all-time high.
I like it. I wonder what was behind that other than maybe pandemic, people stepping away or taking a step back like they were across many industries and figuring out, what do I really want to do and how do I really want to do it? I think during the pandemic, a lot of professionals were reassessing everything from work-life balance to fulfillment to compensation. I just wonder if that had something to do with this increase during that time period.
I mean, to be frank, this is a trend that started 2007.
Financial crisis.
2005.
Okay.
This is a trend that I think is secular. Like, I don't think it's cyclical. I think that there is a move towards independence. To me, the number one thing is that people are increasingly recognizing that the big brokerage firms are self-serving and they're not fiduciaries. I think folks are realizing that. And they also realize that, hey, I can be an entrepreneur in this space, or I can join a firm Truly. That is entrepreneurial.
Yes.
And do okay and be able to be more aligned with my clients.
Sure. And the big firms do have their place. We all,
of course,
you know, we both got our starts there. There is room for all of us at all of the different firms that exist, but I like that we're independent.
Absolutely.
I like the autonomy that comes with it. I don't feel any pressure to promote something that somebody doesn't need, let alone want.
Yeah. So the number of clients that are being served by independent registered investment advisors has grown by 12.5%. 56 million clients are covered by these 15,000 firms, and there's over $128 trillion with a T in assets being managed by financial advisors at independent firms.
Pocket change.
Workforce. So we have 300,000 people in this country working as financial advisors, but in the sector, 1 million people. So 300,000 actual licensed advisors and another 700,000 people supporting those advisors in a number of different ways. And the
wow, field, I don't think I realized the ratio of, let's call it support to advisors is 3 to 1?
Yeah.
2.5 to 1?
It's growing. I think every advisor with support can just be a lot more useful in their space.
I agree. We're going to talk about that some more before this is all over with. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I mean, also in that number, there's administrative folks.
Of course.
Compliance folks, executives who don't cover clients. Yep. So it's not all like direct support, but
I understand.
Yes.
Broadly support.
Other stats. So 3% Black, 31% are women of financial advisors. And the number is actually expected to grow, not just of women, but just of advisors in general. It is expected that there will be an additional 13% growth in the number of people who are financial advisors in the next 10 years. And that's more than other occupations. So this is really a growing field.
So what's interesting about that stat is that seems counter to what we've been talking about in terms of robo-advisors. Mm-hmm. So there's this thought, this belief, this theory that as AI improves, that more people will be comfortable or rely on robo-advisors and there'll be less room for us in this field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we know differently in that what we have found is what clients really want is customized, personalized financial advice. Yeah, the robo-advisor is for some people. You know, give me a portfolio, tell me how to allocate it, and I'll just automatically, my savings, my investments will go into that. But most people really want personal, customized financial advice that they get from a human being.
I had a call with a woman this morning, ironically, the same woman I talked about on air last week, and really just had to refocus her. Like, I sent her an email with all the questions she wanted to know, but let's get on Zoom. Turn your camera on. Let's share screens. Let me look at the house you're thinking about buying. Let's write on the screen a list of pros and cons. Let's now look at the numbers. Here's how much you spent last year. Here's how much you grew last year. Here's how much came from dividends and interest. Here's how this is going to impact your overall retirement goal and your goal of being able to leave an inheritance for your daughter. Like, we went through all that stuff in real time, and she left the call 180 degrees feeling differently.
Wow. I'm really interested in how you wrote this on the screen, but I guess we'll talk about that later.
Keyboard.
You just upgraded all your technology, so I'm a little jelly.
Yeah. I'm a big tech guy. It was funny. The biggest thing that I buy, I'm a big like monitor, keyboard, mouse, in addition to the computer, of course. But
no, but the impact, though, of being able to circle things, write things. You know, we send a lot of data or share a lot of data electronically. Mm-hmm. And even though we might be screen sharing, there's something to that. I like that.
Absolutely. So now we'll talk about CFPs. CFPs are certified financial planners. It is a certificate. It's a designation. You've got to pass a test.
Hold on. you got to take like 6 courses and complete them and pass them before moving on to each one before you are eligible for taking the test.
Yes.
Doesn't matter.
You can't just go take the test.
You can't just go take the test. Yeah.
Take a class, pass the class, all the different sections.
Multiple classes.
And there's a work experience requirement and you need a college degree.
Yep.
So this is sort of a higher standard for financial advisors. There are 1,942 Black CFPs in the country today, and they represent less than 2% of all CFPs in this country. We have CFPs at our firm. We think the CFP profession is great. And again, there's not a lot of us in that field pursuing that particular designation. Now, here's some of the issues with the fact that there's a dearth of us, women and minorities. I'll even say women because at 30%, we know that women control way more than 30% of the assets. And not to say that it's got to be a one for one for every woman that with money, you need a female advisor. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that I think the profession should look like the clients, like in some kind of way. And 30% women, 3% Black folks, like that does not look like the country. It does not look like the folks who have the money.
Alan, you're sounding woke.
Oh, my gosh.
It sounds like you're talking about DEI.
No, I would never talk about DEI. What is DEI anyway? Let me see. Danger.
Elon.
Danger, Elon, and investigation. I would never talk about that. No. So some of the issues with these numbers. Number one, you've got a big transfer of wealth that's going to younger people. $38 trillion is going into the hands of Gen Z and millennials by 2045 over the next 20 years.
That is huge.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
And we've talked in the past. Last week, we did a show about the generations and the like, younger generations.
Do you want to just turn that over?
I'm saying they care about what their money says about them.
Mm-hmm.
They care about being socially responsible. They care about who they're working with and what values the person has. And so I think it matters. We got big wealth transfer that's coming. We also have a big, we hear about the wealth gap, but there's also an inheritance gap, right? Like if there's a wealth gap, there's naturally an inheritance gap.
Speak on it.
And the expectation is that unless something changes, Black folks will inherit less wealth than their white counterparts. And this last stat I really love, the cost of the racial wealth gap. Like, because Black folks make less money on average for the same job than white folks do, because Black folks have less wealth on average in other communities, it's costing us $5 trillion of GDP.
When I saw that, I was astounded. And it really inspired this episode.
Yeah.
By closing the wealth gap, $5 trillion would be added to the GDP?
Think about it. If
over 5 years?
If Black folks have more money, we will spend more money, we'll create more jobs as a result, we'll support more businesses as a result. There's a multiplier effect of wealth, of spending, that our entire economy is suffering from today. Because we know that wealth is really, it's captured by very, very few of us. And the super wealthy aren't big spenders. The super wealthy are big investors, and they're just creating wealth that's growing and growing, and it's just going to go to more people, and you can't spend all that money.
Sounds like everybody winning to me.
Word.
Why would more people winning not make America great?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I hear you. So we're talking today about Black financial advisors. I happen to know a few.
Couple.
There may or may not be some hosting this podcast today.
More likely may than may not.
And we may run a firm called Momentum Advisors that happens to be one of the largest and most successful Black wealth management firms in the country.
We are unicorns.
Hey, you said it, not me. So We'll go to break. When we come back, I want to hear your story about getting into this field as a Black person.
You know, I love telling my story.
I want you to tell it differently, though, in a way that doesn't embarrass your partner.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
And hopefully we'll encourage somebody to reconsider whether they want to work with a Black advisor, have an advisor at all, and also whether you want to be an advisor or work in the industry one day. Black History Month, we got to end it on a high note.
That's right.
I'm Alan Boomer.
I'm Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
We're the Black Momentum Advisors.
Blackity Black.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Momentum.
Okay, we are back.
Mm-hmm.
We are still Black.
We telling stories. We telling true stories, though.
I want to hear about you. So you, we all know that you studied accounting because your mama said you'll always have a job.
So you're going to tell my story.
No.
No, I'm just messing with you.
I want to jump in.
I'm messing with you.
I want to jump into the pivot part.
Okay.
You know, you grew up in New Orleans. You moved to New Jersey in high school. Went to Hampton University to study accounting. Worked in the field for many years, not advising in the initial part of your career, and eventually making a switch. So when it was time for you to make that switch, what really prompted you to want to become an advisor versus just working in the financial industry?
It was clear to me that I was unfulfilled in the work I was doing.
Okay.
I was doing well. I had achieved the title of vice president. That was like a thing.
It's a big deal.
I was pretty well compensated.
Mm-hmm.
I had work-life balance. I had flexibility.
Okay.
I could work remotely when it demanded it. I traveled a little bit, but not too much. But it wasn't enough. And I underestimated how important it was in my 40s to feel fulfilled in the work I was doing.
Yeah.
And it was so necessary that I felt suffocated, even though there was not a trigger to make me like really, there was no obvious trigger. I will say, just to put some context around it, I was sort of working towards it without unintentionally. I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
I had done a couple of workshops, like I'll call them financial literacy workshops at my church.
Okay.
And I remember the first one I did, they titled it, "What's in Your Wallet?"
Mm-hmm.
And so I just researched a couple of things and just shared some things about what I knew. And I would walk away from these workshops, and, you know, I had done several at this point, where people would go, they would ask me questions. And mm-hmm. I'd be like, Oh, no, no, no. I work for companies that give financial advice and hires financial advisors, but I'm not one. So people would approach me as if I was already working in the field, and I would refer them to who they should talk to. Mm-hmm. But literally after, I can say it, Bank of America acquired Merrill Lynch, there was a lot of corporate restructuring and shuffling.
Okay.
And I was on my 9th person I was reporting to in as many months. It was just like ridiculous. And I sat at my desk and I sobbed.
Yeah.
Because I was so unfulfilled.
But talk about the...
And I don't do that, yeah, though.
Talk about the unfulfillment, the lack of fulfillment. Is it that you felt like your work didn't have impact or you just didn't enjoy it?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
A little bit of both. And it just... I just didn't even know that was important to me.
Yeah.
And so I had a conversation with someone that had been rescheduled a few times, and we were supposed to be talking about strategic opportunities for like the Black employee group, whatever it was called at that time. And it turned into a different conversation. He was letting me know that he was leaving. So I'm going to say it on air. Linford Grant. Thank you. We were supposed to be talking about that, but we were both pivoting. He was leaving the company and he noticed that I was just not myself. And he's like, well, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I don't know. He's like, so you have your investments licenses, mm-hmm, which I had got on my own. No one required me to do that.
Yeah.
You're considering, you're taking financial planning courses.
On your own.
On your own that you're paying for.
Wow.
The company wouldn't pay for it because it wasn't a requirement in my mm-hmm job. They would pay for the license because I could benefit from that. And you never considered being a financial advisor? And I'm like, of course I did. And I give him the list of all the reasons why I didn't want to do it.
Okay.
And it was, I'm Black. I don't have a sales background. I'm a mom. Mm-hmm. All these things. I'm not wealthy.
Hurt. Yeah.
Yeah. And he goes, that's the problem with women. Mm. And I said,
it's the problem with you women.
Yes. That was really, and at first I was like, I don't know what you mean.
If he said it like, that's the problem with y'all women. Like, it's a way to really...
I mean, it was kind of like that, but he fixed it real quick. Yeah. He said, you're looking at a job description and you're looking at all the things and saying, I don't have that, I don't have that, I don't have that.
Yeah.
I promise you, men don't look at it like that. And we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
And he basically said, listen, if you're interested in learning more, I can pass your resume along and... what you do after that is up to you. That's my parting gift for you. And 2 weeks later...
Black man or white man?
Black man.
Okay.
2 weeks later...
not that that's the only
I was getting called... Okay. Yeah.
My kids are always like, why are you asking? Like, there's only two
I
ask
these
races.
Questions that I started asking my kids differently when they were younger because they were like, before you ask... or then it was like... why do you ask that all the time?
I'm trying to picture the person.
I know.
Is all.
I know. It's fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was an internal recruiter who was like, oh my gosh, she's already licensed. She's already here.
Yeah.
Like, this is great.
Home run.
So they were like, which office do you want to work in? I'm like, hold on.
Yeah.
I'm not about that commission life. I got to get my bonus. I got to work on a financial plan. So that was really it. It's not an exciting story, but that's what it was.
Okay.
I cried at my desk and I had never cried at work over anything.
So your reasons for, I know you gave the reasons why not.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say the top three reasons for becoming a financial advisor are?
It sounds so cliche, but I wanted to help people.
Yeah.
And I knew I could. I just didn't know if I was cut out to be in sales, because the sales environment is cutthroat.
Yeah.
And I wasn't trying to bring that energy, but I'm competitive. And I forgot that that's kind of what you need.
Yeah.
So I knew I could do it, but I also figured it was safe in the sense that if I failed at the firm I was already at, I could just go back to, I wasn't going to unlearn all the other stuff I had learned or experience I had to get to where I was, so I could just go back and do that.
Yeah. So now you're years in. Was it harder than you expected or easier? Or just different than what you expected?
Different. It wasn't hard.
Hmm.
I'm not saying there weren't hard days.
Yeah.
But the job itself wasn't hard. The environment was hard.
Yeah.
The Navigating the micro and macro aggressions was hard. Like, those were the hard things. The hard things was not running the business, yeah, bringing the clients in, having the conversation. I didn't find those difficult at all. It was the other things that people made it hard when they didn't have to.
It's like the Lauryn Hill song. It could all be so simple, but you'd rather make it hard. That's what the industry does to us.
That is what the industry does to us. Yeah. And it will make some people angry.
Yeah.
I mean, I had my angry season.
Yeah. It's interesting that you said that, because for me, when I think about the job, you're right. The job is easy, but y'all make it hard by... Here's the things that they do that happen in this industry.
Let's talk about it. We were talking about this with that.
Everybody else around you that doesn't look like you gets hooked up with something, and you don't get hooked up with anything.
Yep.
Which effectively puts you backwards.
Yep.
Like you, like if we're all at the starting line, you just told the other people to go, and I'm still standing at the starting line. And then you say, now it's time for you to go. Oh, why are you behind?
Or you're not even at the same starting line. It's like, you get to start from up here.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about a staggered start on a curve like track and field. We're talking about straight line.
Straight line.
Yep.
Like you start 10 feet ahead, you start 10 feet back, and go at the same time. Hey, y'all all started at the same time. How come such and such is way ahead? Well, he started significantly high. But here's the messed up part. So number one, they will start someone else ahead of you. And what I mean by that, like I remember, like there were folks that went to the same college as someone. Yep. I went to an HBCU, so clearly, like, the white folks at my job didn't go to Morgan State University.
Right.
So, oh, yeah, nah, I just hooked them up with that person because the person went to that college and I went there and it's nothing. It's cool. So, but then the second thing they do is, well, why can't you be more like that guy? Oh, the guy you hooked up with the clients? You mean that guy?
Yeah.
The third thing that
I don't belong to the same country club.
The third thing that I found challenging is, like, I always thought that our job revolved around us doing a good job for clients.
Yes.
And it was never part of the discussion. The only thing that our managers cared about was how much did you bring in new assets and revenue. There was never a conversation of, did you do a good job as an investor, as a financial planner? And I spent my time on that stuff.
Yep.
And the selling. And I was good at both.
Yep.
And yet the thing that I got into the field for, I never got graded for.
Yeah. So they literally used to call us asset gatherers.
Yeah.
And they're an asset gatherer. And the plan, I believe, in many of those instances was, we're going to let this person gather assets and then we're going to put more barriers in their way so they fail out. And by the way, those assets that they gather, we're going to try to keep them, or at least the ones that we want to keep.
Yeah.
And we're going to make it complicated for them to take them with them if they continue doing this somewhere else.
Man.
It could all be so simple.
So my story. I was working at the financial industry too. And I will say this. I worked in the industry for a number of years before even knowing what financial advisors did. I just knew that this job paid well. And I was curious about learning. Like, I didn't grow up in a household where my parents read the Wall Street Journal or talked about stocks at the dinner table. And eventually I realized, oh, my company is actually helping people. And then I realized, oh, I'm not helping anybody.
Right.
And then I said, oh, I would love to be able to help people. Oh, then I should be an advisor. And then that's when my journey started. Like, I had a family member, actually one of my wife's uncles, who's a doctor. He came to me and said, oh, you work at Merrill Lynch. Can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't. I introduced him to somebody at Merrill Lynch.
Yeah.
And that person couldn't.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this could be a great career path that I could learn how to be the one helping people. And that's really what made me want to embark in this career. But here's what I met. I was met with all kinds of, are you crazies? Because I went to business school. I got an MBA in finance.
You mean when you asked your friend, when you told your friend you wanted to be an advisor?
Yeah. They're like, why would you?
I didn't tell anybody.
You didn't?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
smart. Well, you didn't tell a lot of people.
I didn't tell a lot of people because
you
know.
I got you.
You know that story.
I got you. So I'm at one of the top business schools in the country at NYU Stern. And everyone wanted to be investment bankers or work for a management consulting firm. Like, those were the two career paths. And the third one was probably like brand management. Those are the three majors. And I said, well, I want to be a high net worth advisor. I want to work with folks who have millions of dollars. And folks are looking at me like I'm crazy because I'm black. And I did not grow up with a silver spoon in my mouth. And there's this view that black folks don't have any money. And
we ate with our hands.
All of these things. And at the same time, while everyone is saying, don't do it, I'm thinking to myself, oh, maybe that's where the opportunity is. Because if everyone else got turned away, I'm going to go for it. And I bet you I can make this work.
So let me mention something here without telling the part of the story that you don't want me to tell. I felt convinced, or maybe convicted, that I was called to do this. And so sometimes when you're called to do something, it's not for you to share.
Yeah.
And so I was so convicted that I was supposed to be doing this. Like, I remember having the vision. I remember it like it's a PowerPoint slide. Black background, white, bold, Arial font. Keep doing what you're doing. The business will come.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really need to share that with anybody else because I felt like what I would most likely get is the why. Mm-hmm. And so I just, to me, once God has spoken, no one else really needs to understand it.
God has spoken. let the church say amen.
That's literally how I felt. So I went in with this is going to be churchy, a holy boldness, if you will, that I could be successful doing it however God told me to do it, which may not fit the program. And that's kind of how it played out.
Yeah.
Drea, you're not cold calling enough. And I'm like, none of the business I close, I'm at the top of the leaderboard and none of this business came from cold calls. So
yeah, I love it.
You want me to spend more time doing something? Shouldn't I spend more time doing what's working?
Yeah, you highlight a great story about how folks used to get started as advisors. It was a lot of cold calling. And today, folks meet clients through a variety of ways, including podcasts and social media and just networking.
And church workshops.
And church.
And the deli line. And
yeah. Microaggressions, though. Go back to that for a second. So I had a guy, a white advisor, say to me, so if you and I were teammates, we'll be great together because you go after the black ones and I'll go after the white ones. And he was dead serious. And had I listened to him, I probably wouldn't be in business today. And I only say that because not that black folks don't have money, but I'm not relegated to only working with black folks. The clients of Momentum, I mean, if I could put up a photo of every client that we cover at this firm, folks would be astounded. Like white folks who, the microaggression types who think that black folks need to only work with black advisors and women only need to work with women advisors and Asian folks need to work with Asian. Like, you would be astounded at the diversity of our client base.
Absolutely.
And thank God folks are open-minded more than just doing racial matching and gender matching, because a lot of professionals would not have a business today. Think of all the doctors you go to who have a different race than you. And you never question that. Like, why would I question whether I should work with a black advisor because they're black?
Yeah, that is really interesting. You know, when I started in the business, they were very big on having you identify your niche. Do you say niche? Is it niche or niche? What is it?
It depends on who I'm talking to. If I want
to
sound sophisticated, I say niche.
You're talking to the podcast listeners.
If I want to sound sophisticated like I do right now, niche.
Okay. We're going with niche because that's what I said. So I was kind of like, I don't want to put myself in a box.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know that I want to have a niche. And of course, I got the women, African-Americans as suggestions. Now, don't get me wrong. I do understand from a business and strategic planning perspective, you can create some scale if you identify a population of people, but not necessarily with those guardrails or labels. But when you're starting out, you will take on assets from anybody who's willing.
Yeah.
Because we had to make those goals or else we would get fired.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was backwards in terms of I don't even have a producer number. I can't even talk to anybody yet. And you're asking me to identify a niche market.
Yeah.
Like, let's just get some people in first.
Yeah, I don't even believe in that. Like, yeah, I think
if it develops, so my niche, I almost said something else. It developed very organically. It wasn't a niche that I pursued. It just happened. And to me, that's the best kind.
I love that. So we're talking about Black financial advisors today, and we're talking about more than just Alan and Andrea, by the way. Let's switch gears and let's talk a little bit about some of the organizations, some of the groups that are really trying to make sure that this field gets more diversified. The first one is Quad A, and Quad A is the Association for African American Financial Advisors. That's a lot of A's. Association of African American Advisors, Quad A. The website is AAAFA, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
This is a group.
Because AAAA
it's too many
was probably A's. Taken.
So many.
So they had
A's.
To differentiate.
I mean, look, if I were the head, I would change the name. Like, that's.
We like A's.
Or
though,
at least
don't
I
we?
Would change the website. I do like A's. Don't get me wrong.
So now I'm curious. Now I need to look up what is www.aaaa.org.
So Quad A is the Association for African American Financial Advisors. And it really was created to increase the number of Black folks who are financial advisors. They represent over 2,500 financial advisors, and there's over 7,000 people who are members of the organization.
That's nice. I'm not over the A's yet.
Okay.
I did a search on www.aaaa.org.
Okay.
And the website domain is already taken. So that's why the website, they had to add the F for website purposes.
First of all, the organization started in 2001. I don't know if that other group was around back then, but it was started by a guy named LeCount Davis, who was the first Black CFP in the country. He became a CFP in 1978. And the group really is all about getting advisors together because there's strength in numbers. And they, in particular, are starting an alliance program with leaders from HBCUs and PWIs that are looking to create more of a movement around this profession, and the educational institutions need to be providers of this education.
I love it. I'm confident that if something like this existed when I was an undergrad, I may have been drawn to this profession earlier.
Absolutely.
Because when I look back, I still wanted to help people, right? Mm-hmm. I told you I took my mom's advice and was like, I don't really know exactly what I want to do, but if I'm going to work in business, I studied accounting. And my initial thought, I just didn't know how to go about doing it, was I wanted to, believe it or not, I wanted to help athletes financially.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I was drawn to that was because I knew the story. I'm a big sports fan, and mm-hmm. I knew the stories of all these professional athletes, particularly Black professional athletes,
mm-hmm.
who came into large sums of money, and in very short order, that money was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want that trend to continue. But as an accounting major with no ties to professional sports, I didn't know how to break in.
Yeah.
Right? Like this, there was sports management was not a major that was offered. Actually, it was offered my senior year of college, but I would have had to stay an extra semester or two.
Yeah.
Because I'd already taken the business classes. So then my next idea, since I didn't have any connection, was to try to get on, put on with one of the players associations.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a classmate who graduated a year before who worked for the MLB Players Association. So I was like, hey, if I can get into one of these players associations, maybe I can convince them to have some type of life adjustment or life transition team and teach financial literacy to mm-hmm. these athletes who may not have come from money, but all of a sudden were wealthy. I just didn't want to see them lose that money.
Yeah.
I was tired of the stories.
Yeah.
So that was really coming out of college. That's really what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to do it.
Well, look, fast forward. I mean, our firm has a number of both college athletes who are clients, and
yeah.
these NIL millionaires are making a lot of money now, and our firm covers a lot of them. And we have pro athletes who are clients. And we have regular working professionals. We have entrepreneurs. We have folks who've inherited money. We have folks who are recipients of legal settlements from car accidents and folks who got settlements from being wrongfully incarcerated. I mean, really. And then there's institutions we cover. We cover a number of major nonprofit organizations as clients, and we're helping all of them. And it's a beautiful thing. And your mission is coming full circle through the work we're doing. So let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll talk some more about Quad A and all the organizations that are really helping to solve this problem of there not being enough Black advisors. And we'll talk a little bit more about why you should consider a Black financial advisor. I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors. It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
So we're back.
Yes.
And we're Black still.
We're back and we're Black.
Happy.
Bigger and better. Forget about Deffer.
Ooh.
I don't know why that came
into
my psyche.
We got to black it up a little bit. So other organizations. So we talked about Quad A.
Let's talk about these colleges.
Yeah, these colleges.
We're in college decision season.
There's a number of PWIs, predominantly white institutions, and HBCUs, historically Black colleges and universities. People are always trying to say HSBC. No, man.
Again,
HBCU. Yeah, not a bank. But there's a number of institutions offering CFP, Certified Financial Planning, courses, certificates, and degrees.
Or just financial planning courses.
Break them down.
It is still Black History Month, so we're going to start with the HBCUs.
Okay, HSBCs, got it.
Howard University.
Mm-hmm.
Hampton University.
One of them is the real HU. I'm not sure which one.
They are both very much real.
Yeah. The real HU, though. I mean, that's y'all argument. That's true. This
that's
is true.
Whose argument?
Never mind.
Fine. Who is whose argument?
Never
who is
mind.
Y'all?
Let's
who
keep
is
going.
Y'all?
I don't know.
Who is you talking about?
All I know is my school was founded in 1867, and so was Howard. And so, like, we both kind of battled
so
for that.
So first means real?
No, it's not. We're not the first. Neither
no,
of us
what,
is the
No,
first.
What I'm saying is I took from your energy that you were claiming Howard as the real HU.
No, I was just
because
making
they
the
were
joke.
Founded before Hampton.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that.
I'm not even sure of that. I just think.
when was Hampton founded?
1868.
So, yeah.
And
Howard came
every
first.
Hampton student knows that.
Yeah. So.
At the same time, Hampton, when it was originally founded, was called
Hampton Institute.
Normal Agricultural Institute.
Oh.
Normal meaning educators.
Okay.
Education. They focused on teaching free Black people to be teachers.
Yep.
And agriculture. Hand, head, heart.
Mm.
They were teaching people, free Black people, to educate so they could have careers where they use their hands, their head, and their heart.
Okay, interesting. Well, Morgan State initially was to train young men for the ministry.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to start breaking down the history of our HBCUs.
Yeah. And the history of how our HBCUs don't have Black firms managing their money. We could do a whole, not enough. We could do a whole.
We working on that though,
thing
right?
About that. Absolutely.
We're working on that, right?
So we got Howard Hampton,
yep. Morehouse, mm-hmm. Spelman,
yep.
and Cheney.
Okay. Big shout to them.
Yes.
And then there's some others. So there's Del State that has a full BS, a Bachelor's of Science degree in financial planning and wealth management. So in this course of study, you'll take classes in things like financial markets, individual taxation, investments. I mean, these are things that weren't part of
every day.
Yeah, and retirement planning, a whole class for a whole semester. Like, that wasn't part of our education in college as an undergrad.
Nope.
So that's Dell State, one of the few that has a full-on BS in financial planning. And then there's a few others. For example, North Carolina Central also has a CFP certificate.
Love it.
And then for our PWIs, there's too many to mention, really. Like, a lot of PWIs have CFPs, but some of the big ones are Harvard, which I think is big because Harvard and a lot of the Ivies historically were more like liberal arts focused, not like focused on professions, like specific professions. Like I think the view for a lot of Ivies is that we're not a vocational school.
Mm-hmm.
And a CFP is very much a vocation. And to see the Ivies embrace this, I think is also a big deal.
Yeah. And so I think it's important to distinguish that these schools that we're naming, they are collaborating with Quad A to sponsor exam prep.
That's
for
great.
The certified financial planning exam. That's different than the Dell State, the North Carolina Central, that actually have degree programs in financial planning.
Perfect.
Which
Thank
probably do include some exam prep, but.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be clear about that.
That's great.
So that none of these schools that have one or the other that we didn't mention don't come for us.
They won't. They don't know where to find us. We're barely on social media anymore.
I'm going to change that. I'm going to actively.
Now, the issue is what platform? Like, Meta, like, do we feel good about that platform? Like, I probably feel a little bit better about Meta than I do Twitter, AKA X. I've been feeling very paralyzed about how to be vocal on social media these days. I've tried to even go to some new platforms. I went so far as to create a new profile on a specific platform that I've seen a lot of folks migrate to.
Mm-hmm.
Literally all the usernames are taken. Not like Momentum
boom,
Advisors
boom
is taken or Boom Boom For Real is taken. I mean, like, I tried to just type in XYXYXY. Like,
there's nothing.
I think bots, competitors have probably made bots to take up all the usernames so that people can't join. Yeah.
I never thought about that.
So we got Harvard, Yale, Georgetown, Texas, University of Texas, and the University of Chicago are all helping students to prepare for not just the CFP exam, but also the SIE, which is kind of like an optional
entry level. It's like a precursor to the series.
Yeah, like
insert number.
Like the SIE, the Securities Industry Exam, is like an exam you can take to make yourself look better for recruiting in the financial industry because it covers certain baseline things like how financial markets and financial products work, how regulations work. And if I pass this test and it indicates well that I'm taking this seriously, maybe I'll do well on my securities exam if you were to give me a chance.
Yeah, so we weren't planning to talk about this, but I wonder. So when we took our licensing exams, the SIE didn't exist.
Yeah.
So now I'm trying to figure out, why does the SIE exist?
Oh, it's a
it's
money grab.
It's almost like a low.
It's a money grab for one. And for two, I think it's a chance for folks to position themselves well.
Okay.
In recruiting.
Okay.
And it's a money grab, more importantly.
But if you still can't do the job without the licensing exams, like, it's just a money grab. Or maybe there were some people who were struggling to pass the licensing exam. So they're like, okay.
Take the SIE.
Do this one.
Yeah.
And then we'll see.
You could say that you passed this. At least you got something behind your name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Because these requirements are not as stringent as financial planning exam. Anyway, I don't
know. So we're starting to run out of time. And there's so many good things I want to get to. So we're going to go a little quicker and just make sure we get through the content. So other organizations who care about diversity still. I know we did check these websites in 2025 in the month of February, and they have not yet removed their diversity language. We've got the CFP board.
We'll go back and check in March.
Word. And they've got a whole I Am a CFP Pro recruitment campaign that really is launched towards women and minorities.
They reach out to me regularly.
They've got diversity summits they host. There's also the FPA, the Financial Planning Association, which still has a diversity scholarship for now, and a DEI committee.
I'm going to go ahead and join.
Yeah.
I've been going to their events, but I didn't join. Maybe I'll wait and see.
Okay. I'll allow it. So why do folks hire advisors? I mean, we've talked about this in the past, but just some real quick stats. Professional advisors help people to add 3% per year to their financial returns. That pays the fee. If you can make an extra 3%, people who work with financial advisors have saved double the amount for retirement than folks who don't have financial advisors.
To be clear, that's more than the fee.
Way more than the fee.
Yeah. Just saying. Just in case somebody's like, why am I going to make more just to pay it to you?
But Lord. And this is a stat that really got me. If people that work with advisors on average retire 2 years earlier. So awesome. You make more money, you have more money, and you can retire earlier.
Will you be my advisor? I want to be done. I'm not doing a good job advising myself.
62% of folks who work with an advisor know exactly how much they need to save to have a comfortable retirement. And if you then look at the folks who don't have one, it drops in half to 30-something percent.
I believe that.
Yeah. So we've established that being a financial advisor is a good career. It's growing. But why hire a Black advisor?
Why not?
So many reasons. This is my reason. So My reason really is that we've already established that 3% of advisors are Black. We know that there's a lot of talented Black folks out there. So if we have an industry that's skipping over the majority of us, then clearly they've missed an opportunity. That's why most of the advisors at our firm are Black. And it's not because we went out looking for Black folks. We went out looking for really great, talented people. And it happens to be that they're Black. And it happens to be that these same people were mistreated by the financial industry. It happens to be that they did not feel comfortable in this industry because of all the micro and macro aggressions. And so I think if you find a Black person who has passed these exams, who's gone through the gauntlet of micro and macro aggressions, you're probably going to find somebody who's very, very good.
Agreed. And resilient.
Absolutely.
And qualified.
And they might understand you a little bit better.
Culturally relevant is how I describe it.
They might be able to help you express yourself a little bit better. There's some people that specifically want Black women in particular. Because like Black women through history have been known to be helpful, better listeners, not to judge. Like there's a lot of reasons why you might want a Black financial advisor.
You know how to get stuff done.
That's a fact. So if you don't have a financial advisor, consider getting one. And if you're considering getting one, you should at least consider a Black financial advisor. We know some great ones at Momentum Advisors, but also I will say Quad A, the Association of African American Financial Advisors, also has a great tool for finding advisors there as well. We'd love for you to hit up our website. We'd also love for you to visit the Quad A website as well.
Yeah, I literally think of it this way. Like, I don't know if this happens at your place of worship, but at my church, oftentimes at the end of service or at a point during service, the pastor or the minister will invite people who to consider giving their life over to Christ, right?
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like, or sometimes it's like, yeah, we'd love for you to join us here. And so as much as I would want people to consider us, I would rather them consider anyone who's qualified.
Yeah.
And consider a Black advisor as well, even if it's not us. Even if they say, you know, this isn't for me. I would rather see for the purpose of closing this racial wealth gap and all the things that could come with it. There's enough room for all of us to compete and do well.
Yeah.
So while I would love to win the business, I would just like to see more people consider us and give us a chance.
Yeah.
Us being Black financial advisors.
I love that.
Yeah.
Really soon I'm hanging out in Atlanta with a bunch of Black financial advisors who I met through Quad A. I've been a member for years. And we're just kicking it. Like, I just want to see what they're up to. I want to encourage them. I want to, you know, make sure that they know what I'm working on. I want to know what they're working on. And I refer business to them. And, you know, I want us to succeed. I want us to win. And on that note, like, if we were making a pitch for why folks should consider being a financial advisor, I mean, number one, and Black folks in particular, like, it's a field where you can do well. It's a field that I think, at least in words, is saying they want us. And I think the numbers kind of show why they want us. But it's a field that's got great work-life balance, really great earning potential. It could be very lucrative. It could be high stress. Good combination of both. But at the end of the day, you're helping people. And if that matters to you, this is certainly a field that you should consider. And on that note, we are hiring right now. We're always looking for advisors who have been working with clients already, even if you're not that successful and, you know, but you have potential. Like, we always want to hire that person. But specifically what we're looking for right now is at the analyst level. And for us, the analyst level would be the person who supports financial advisors. We're looking for someone who is a college graduate, someone who is willing to work out of the New Jersey office, our office in central New Jersey, someone who is interested in finance. Even if they've never done it before, they're open-minded to figuring out if this is a field that could work for them. And if your goal is to one day maybe consider possibly being a financial advisor too, then there's a career path for that inside of our firm. So for anyone who's listening, or if you've got young people in your life who are recently graduating college or early in their careers, please hit us up. You can visit our website, go to the Contact Us page, or email us. You can email resumes to support@momentum-advisors.com. support@momentum-advisors.com. We are hiring right now. We've got to hire at least 2 people this year on the support side, and we're always looking for more financial advisors. We actually just brought on a new advisor just this week, in fact, who we're super excited about. So before we go, we got to have our Black History moment.
Yes. So let's learn a little bit about Travers J. Bell Jr.
So I love highlighting Black folks who've done well in financial services. So we're going to get to Travers J. Bell. Like, he's known as the father of Black investment banking. Like, he became a founder of a NYSE firm in 1971. And for a lot of folks, he's the first person to ever be successful in investment banking and Wall Street. But I love to highlight that there was Jeremiah Hamilton, who made his fortune in New York in the 1800s during the times of slavery. He was a trader. He was a Wall Street guy. He was a little ruthless and cutthroat like the robber barons of his day. Mm. But like, we've been on Wall Street for a very long time. Now, 100 years later, you get Travers J. Bell.
Yeah.
Now, what was different about him is that, no, he wasn't around during slave times, but he did grow up in Chicago in the projects. And his first job on Wall Street was as a messenger.
I love that.
And by 1971, he was founding a firm. His firm was the first Black firm to be a NYSE brokerage firm, a member firm as a brokerage firm.
That's New York Stock Exchange.
And the firm ended up, like, it started out with $175,000 in capital. And it grew. By the time my man died in 1988, the firm had a net worth of $15 million. The firm was a major force in the underwriting of municipal bonds all throughout the South, a major force in capital formation for Black businesses in the 70s and 80s. And he did one of the largest leveraged buyouts by a black company when he helped to advise on the Coca-Line chocolate acquisition.
That was one of the largest Black-owned companies in the 1980s, by the way.
Yeah. And he, just like my guy, like one of my biggest, you know, heroes, as everyone knows, is my guy, Reginald F. Lewis, who died early. For him, it was a brain aneurysm.
Yeah.
For my guy, Travers J. Bell, it was a heart attack at age 46 in 1988. But big shout out to him. Big shout out to his legacy. Like, it's people like him. It's people like the folks I used to read about in Black Enterprise magazine, founded by a Morgan State guy, that made me know that there was space for me. It made me know that the world was a little bit bigger and that I did not need to be the first to do it, but that it had been done before, it had been done well, and I could also do that thing.
And you could do it your way. I mean, that's the beauty of being independent, right?
Absolutely.
Doesn't have to be someone saying it has to be cold calls or something else.
Absolutely. So we've broken down the Black financial advisor today. Hopefully we've encouraged somebody to apply for our job. And hopefully we've encouraged somebody to just be more open-minded about who you're getting your advice from.
Yeah, just consider the profession for our young people out there who are trying to figure out what they want to be when they grow up. And also to the grown-ups who need some financial advice. you know, just give some thought to who you're interviewing. It's kind of like, I don't want to put it in the same context as the Rooney Rule, but if you're interviewing financial advisors, consider whether you should have in your interview population people who look like us.
Not mad at that at all. Keep listening. We'll be back next week. And also visit us at momentum-advisors.com. The contact page is how you get in touch with us if you want to get your portfolio reviewed or really just talk about your plan. We'll take a call with you. And we appreciate folks who reach out.
Always.
I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors. Momentum. Momentum.